Hello, and welcome to the best podcast for the Valley for 2020, as voted by the readers of Phoenix Magazine. You've downloaded another stellar episode of Mac Watson Talks. On this episode, how optimistic is the country after President Biden's first 100 days in office? I've got an answer. Also, Cindy McCain says the Arizona recount is just plain stupid. Okay, she didn't use that word, but you know what I mean. And it's the 10th anniversary of the killing of Osama bin Laden. Do you remember where you were when the president announced it? And why are more cops less likely to get vaccinated? I've got an answer for that as well. No cricket this time. Cricket is in Wyoming with my father-in-law, Jiminy. They're doing all sorts of projects up there, so I'm on my own. Hopefully I do better than I anticipate. So let's get started. This is episode 141.
You're listening to Mac Watson Talks, Season 2. Voted best podcast in the Valley for 2020 by the readers of Phoenix Magazine.
I haven't done this in a long time. I haven't done a talk show by myself in over 10 years, actually. And now that cricket is in Wyoming, let's see if I can get through this myself. Ready? Okay, here we go. In the news this week, President Joe Biden completes his first 100 days in office with a country that is more optimistic about the coming year, according to a new ABC Ipsos poll. Nearly two-thirds of Americans, 64% exactly, are optimistic about the direction of the country in the poll, which was conducted by Ipsos in partnership with ABC News. The last time the country came close to that level of optimism about the coming year was December 2006, when 61% said they were optimistic about where the country was headed. That's according to previous ABC News Washington Post polls. Shortly before the 2016 election catapulted Donald Trump to the Oval Office, only 42% of Americans were optimistic about the future, compared to 52% who were pessimistic. But there were some warning lights flashing for the White House. Biden is betting on a lofty agenda to maintain momentum and set up Democrats for success in next year's midterms, while the GOP is hoping that voters perceive an overreach and the president's policies become an electoral anchor. Only a slim majority, 52%, think the federal government should spend to revitalize the economy, even if that means raising taxes, including 80% of Democrats, 54% of independents. The question of government spending and taxes largely divides Americans, with 47% saying taxes should stay at the same level, even at the expense of the economy, including 78% of Republicans. And after more than a year of the coronavirus pandemic ravaging the country, roughly one-third of Americans, 36%, still remain pessimistic about the country's future under Biden. Only about a quarter of Americans, 23%, think the country has become more united since Biden took office. Among this group, an overwhelming 87% give Biden the credit. Only 3% assigned credit to Republican leaders in Congress. 10% said both in the poll. Look, I don't know about you, but I'm feeling very optimistic, and I'm not really sure. I mean, I have an inkling of why I'm optimistic, but I'm not really sure if that's the case for you. It could be very different in your life, in your family, and in your day-to-day activities. But I know around here, my wife and I have noticed the stock market is still doing well. Our 401ks are still doing well. Also, that I've noticed more job openings lately. I haven't gotten a job, and that's still hard, and that still crushes me. But I see that there are more people opening their doors, more people who are saying we want to hire more people because of the coronavirus pandemic is lessening. More people are getting vaccinated, so I guess that should be more cause for optimism as well. But I think it's also a lack of day-to-day drama that we had in the Trump administration. We don't have to live through the mental anguish of every day wondering, what is this guy going to say next? Who is he going to attack? And what does it mean for the country if he attacks somebody or gets into some kind of Twitter war with somebody? And I've mentioned this before. It's kind of like my kids. After a while, you get sick and tired of the behavior. You want to change the behavior. And I think that's what we had. We had Trump fatigue. Every day was a different battle, a different, vengeance is mine, saith Trump. Every single day we found ourselves wondering, is this it? Is he going to bring us into World War III? Or is he going to take us down the tubes? Or, what's going to happen next? Now that we don't have that and we have politics as usual, and I don't mean that disparagingly. I mean that the way government should work whether you're Democrat or Republican, the way it should work is working right now because Joe Biden is, geez, he spent more than half of his life in D.C. as a congressman, a vice president, and now president of the United States. So am I optimistic? Yes. But I'll tell you why I should be optimistic, because I can't be pessimistic. See, that's the thing, too. If you're pessimistic, you have that Eeyore sensibility from Winnie the Pooh of, oh, boy, it's going to rain. Everything's bad. Everything's not going well. That starts to infect your life. And when that starts infecting your life, it affects your family. It affects, your coworkers, your colleagues. And you can't have that. So I've got to keep a positive outlook, even though I've been unemployed for a long time, even though I might not. I don't know if I'm going to get back in radio or not. I don't know if any radio station will have me. I've got to figure that out for myself. But I try to remain as optimistic as I can. And I think it's because we're trying to return to some kind of new normalcy. And we're doing that under Joe Biden. Now, does that mean I love everything that Joe Biden has done? Absolutely not. I do not like him trying to be the second coming of FDR. I do not like him trying to use bigger government to make your life better. I don't think that's going to work. I don't think taxing people making over $400,000 is going to work either. I don't think a lot of his agenda is going to make it through Congress. I think it's going to stall. And then I think the Biden administration is going to have to figure out what else it can do to keep the momentum going in Washington and the country as more and more people are optimistic. Again, the shine is still on the penny with Joe Biden. The first 100 days can say a lot or it can say a little. With Joe Biden's case, it's saying that there's a lot of hopefulness. There's a lot of hope that is being felt throughout the country. Doesn't mean, though, that happy days are here again. Also in the news this week, Cindy McCain, the widow of John McCain, the senator from Arizona, spoke up about what's going on in Arizona as far as the Arizona Republicans' audit of the 2020 election results. She called it Sunday as ludicrous. Arizona Senate Republicans hired a Florida firm, Cyber Ninjas, to audit the election results in Maricopa County, though only the two races, President and U.S. Senate, were won by Democrats. Cyber Ninja founder Doug Logan has offered pro-Trump conspiracy theories about the election. Logan wrote on Twitter, "The parallels between the statistical analysis of Venezuela and this year's election are astonishing." He wrote that in December before deleting his account, according to the Arizona Republic. The Cyber Ninjas website has nothing indicating the firm has experienced with election audits and instead markets itself to clients who want to be protected from hackers. Critics have pointed out that there is nothing stopping them from tampering with or removing some of the ballots they were counting. It wasn't until Thursday of last week when a judge ordered them to do so that Cyber Ninjas, which had sought to do the recount in private, disclosed the procedures for the audit. Now, Cindy McCain said she was not surprised by any of this. She said on CNN's State of the Union, "The election is over. Biden won. I know many of you don't like the outcome, but elections have consequences." I don't understand the whole premise of this. I really don't. I have faith in the election. I have faith in the election results. You may not like the election results, but that doesn't mean that a bunch of people calling themselves cyber ninjas have any right to come in and figure out if Arizona got it right or did it right. And here's the thing that really bugs me about this whole thing. What if they find something? What if they find some irregularity? Well, that only furthers the narrative that the election was stolen and that Donald Trump should be president. That doesn't help us to move forward at all. And also can be a black spot, a black mark, a black eye for the state of Arizona. Once again, the state of Arizona looks foolish in a political season right now. Also in the news this week marks the 10th anniversary of the killing of Osama bin Laden. I don't know where you were, but I remember exactly where I was when we found out that on the morning of May 11th, 2011, most Americans had never heard of this place called Abbottabad. By that night, the dusty mid-sized city near the mountains of northwest Pakistan was the center of the biggest story in the world. A team of U.S. Navy SEALs had just descended by helicopter on a high-walled mansion in the dark of night, locating the globe's most hunted man and killed him. Now, the effort to track and execute Osama bin Laden, which took place 10 years ago this weekend, was the most closely held operational secret in modern American history, a highly sensitive, politically fraught, and physically risky mission that involved breaching the sovereign territory of a purported U.S. ally to target an icon of international violence and terror. Once his death was announced in a hastily organized late Sunday night presidential address, I don't know whether you watched that or not, but we did, and I remember saying nothing good comes out of D.C. late at night or on the weekends, but what we found out was much of the initial attention focused on the bravery and skill of the SEAL operators who flew in and conducted the attack. Other popular culture, like the movie Zero Dark Thirty, would later center on the years of work by analysts who traced the elusive bin Laden to his compound. But the operation also stands as a fascinating window into the most rarefied zone of presidential decision-making. Barack Obama, the president, had the sole responsibility and sole authority to approve an act with huge consequences and huge risks, one that could easily sink his presidency if it all went bad. And with a decade's hindsight, there was another consequential domestic political subplot at work that week, too. On the day between when Obama approved the operation and when SEAL Team 6 helicoptered in, the president kept a long-scheduled date at the White House Correspondent Association dinner where he publicly roasted celebrity real estate developer turned TV host Donald Trump for pumping up the birther conspiracy theory that he wasn't a real citizen. The bin Laden raid that President Obama greenlit that Friday in late April, codenamed Operation Neptune Spear, was the culmination of months of intricate preparation that reached across the Capitol and around the globe. From full-scale SEAL dress rehearsals in North Carolina to deep Washington legal debates over whether the mission could be kill or capture, all planned around a small, precise physical model of the Obatabad compound that traveled back and forth from the CIA headquarters in suburban Virginia to the West Wing. The tense moments as the raid unfolded half a world away yielded one of the most famous inside-the-room photographs in presidential history. Pete Souza's portrait of 14 people crammed into a White House Situation Room anteroom, a moment of high drama that includes Joe Biden, Hillary Clinton, and two future current cabinet secretaries. I don't know about you, but I remember where I was. I remember I was watching television when I got an alert from somebody from the radio station saying, the president's going to speak, we need to tune in. And I thought, man, this has got to be bad. Nothing good comes out of D.C. after 6 o'clock at night or on the weekend. And then when we found out it was Osama bin Laden, I could not believe the relief I felt. And I don't know about you, but it was 10 years too long for me. It really was. After September 11th, 2001, it took us 10 years to track this man down and finally kill him. To me, that was too long, but I'm glad we did it. I'm glad we found him, and I'm glad we put the guy in a grave, a watery grave from what we understand. So for me, it was a sense of relief. And then we went on the air later that night, all of us in a roundtable discussion, and talked about what it meant for the country. And I said it meant for the country that the country could start healing from the wound of September 11th, 2001. But, you know, it's not going to bring lives back. It's not going to bring people back. That's for sure. But it took a madman. It took a mass murderer off the face of the planet. And that's always a good thing. So how did I do? Did I do okay on my own? I hope so. That's just some of the news this week. Oh, Cricket's not here to thank. I'll thank myself. Thanks, Mac.
You're listening to Mac Watson Talks, Season 2. Voted best podcast in the Valley for 2020 by the readers of Phoenix Magazine.
Have you become part of the VIP? Are you an exclusive member with Patreon? Make sure you join today. Patreon.com/MacWatsonTalks. Here's just a snippet of what you're going to get.
We're freezing cold.
And your sister's pregnant, or is it just you and your mom?
No, my sister's pregnant. So she's like, I don't know, maybe 5 months pregnant. She's not like super pregnant. And we get up on, so he has four ladders set up, and we each have to get up on a ladder and climb up holding this piece of sheetrock. And then hold it in place while he starts screwing at his corner. And then he gets down and moves his ladder and comes and screws at somebody else's corner.
Man.
And then we're doing this all throughout this whole garage. It's not just one piece of sheetrock.
Right.
And my little sister is like crying. Like, I'm good. she's like just having a complete meltdown.
But
over
she's
it.
Still holding it up, right?
We didn't have a choice.
Right. So go to Patreon, patreon.com/MacWatsonTalks, and become a member today. Get content you're not going to get anywhere else, maybe even some free swag, all for your membership. So do it today, patreon.com/MacWatsonTalks. Time for the smackdown, and this time I'm smacking down police officers who haven't gotten vaccinated. Police officers are among the first of frontline workers to gain priority access to coronavirus vaccines, but their vaccination rates are lower than or about the same as those of the general public, according to data made available by some of the nation's largest law enforcement agencies. The reluctance of police to get the shots threatens not just their own health, but also the safety of people they're responsible for guarding, monitoring, and patrolling, so say experts. At the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department, just 39% of employees have gotten at least one dose, officials said, compared to more than 50% of eligible adults nationwide. In Atlanta, 36% of sworn officers have been vaccinated, and a mere 28% of those employed by the Columbus Division of Police, Ohio's largest police department, report having received a shot. Joe Lombardo, the head of Las Vegas Police and Sheriff of Clark County, said of the meager demand for shots within the force, "I think it's unacceptable. The numbers paint a troubling picture of policing and public health. Because officers have high rates of diabetes, heart disease, and other conditions, their hesitancy puts them at greater risk of serious illness from the coronavirus, while also undermining force readiness," experts say. Police officers were more likely to die of COVID-19 last year than of all other causes combined, according to data compiled by the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund. Police hesitancy also means officers may be vectors of spread to vulnerable people with whom they interact with during traffic stops, calls for service, and other high-contact encounters. That could thwart efforts to restore community trust in a moment of heightened security after last month's conviction of ex-officer Derek Chauvin in the killing of George Floyd. One professor of law and bioethics at Case Western Reserve University, Sharona Hoffman, says, "Imagine having a child in the car who's not vaccinated. People would want to know if a police officer coming to their window is protected." Police ambivalence about immunizations finds a parallel among the frontline workers. Just 52% of healthcare workers surveyed by the Washington Post and the Kaiser Family Foundation said they have received at least one dose. One solution is for departments to make vaccination compulsory, according to experts in bioethics and public health, just as some healthcare settings and institutions of higher education have been doing. But department leaders and union officials said in interviews that such requirements could backfire or lead to lengthy litigation. Of more than 40 major metropolitan police departments contacted by the Washington Post, none had made vaccination compulsory for employees. That reflects a belief among officers and their unions that getting a shot is a private decision. Hesitancy within police departments is rooted in some of the same concerns expressed by the general public, according to police chiefs, union officials, and experts in public policy and policing. Officers have voiced unease about the novelty of the shots and the speed in which they are developed, along with the confidence that they can avoid the virus with proper protective gear. Some cities are even turning to incentives to boost participation. The Phoenix Police Department is offering a one-time $75 vaccine safety award to employees who get protected, but only 919 employees of the 3,982 total have submitted a completed vaccine card to receive the reward, says city spokesperson Dan Wilson. Other places are using inducements of other kinds to spur interest in the vaccines. Lombardo, the chief in Las Vegas, revoked a policy at the beginning of April that had treated all COVID-19 infections as work-related. Now officers must use their own sick leave to quarantine and recuperate. But the order has a little effect, he said, as more than 30 employees have tested positive since. Lombardo says he's also sought to make vaccinations more accessible by offering shots in briefing rooms and jails. "I'm doing everything I can," he says, "to make it readily available, but I hire from the human race and sometimes people are just lazy." Boy, that may be a bigger problem than we realize. And that is the smackdown. You hear the music, you know what that means. It's time for the last word. Well, this guy is just a plain hero. There's no way around it. An employee at a Sickerville auto shop in New Jersey was arrested after bringing a loaded gun to the store and threatening his boss. Dean Hardwick of Gloucester Township, who works at the Mavis Discount Tire, was reprimanded Saturday morning for his performance, police said in a press release. He became irate and threatened the manager, telling him he would be coming back to the store, quote, with something for him, unquote. He returned to the shop 15 minutes later with a loaded small 38 caliber firearm, which he pulled out of a hoodie pocket before walking toward the lobby where several customers were waiting. The store manager tackled Hardwick and wrestled the gun away from him, subduing him until police from Winslow Township and then Gloucester Township arrived in response to 911 calls. Gloucester Township police said there were no injuries to any of the employees, police, or patrons, thanks to the swift actions of the store manager. Like I said, that guy is a hero. Until next time. Thank you for listening to Mac Watson Talks. This episode is copyrighted and may not be reproduced in whole or part without express written permission. For more information, to become a sponsor, or to schedule an upcoming appearance by Mac or Cricket or both, visit MacWatsonOnline.com. Connect with us on Twitter, Facebook, or Patreon, and leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. If you like what you hear, share us with your friends. We love new listeners.